All right, we're ready for Matthew chapter 24. It is a very notable chapter, controversial chapter. There's some difficult sections. We can get, I think, the gist of that, but there are some difficult sections we're going to try to tackle. So we have some ground to cover. This is the ministries of Jesus, and we are at Passion Week. We have gone through the early Judean, the Galilean, the latter Judean ministry, and we're in that latter Judean ministry, but part of that is this Passion Week, as we talked about. This is J. Sidlow Baxter's outline. We're in the Judean ministry. That's the latter Judean ministry, and he presents it as the presentation, crucifixion, and resurrection. We're in the presentation division, and we'll be through next week. Let's forego the review of our chapters in interest of time, because I want us to get through chapter 24. We are in Passion Week, and we have tried to label the day of the week where we are, and when we change day, then I'll flag that for you so you can note that in your text. So for the last couple of weeks, the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, which was on Sunday, we flagged that in chapter 21, the cleansing of the temple, same chapter. And then we start into this conflict with the Jews in the last public discourse on Tuesday. That's where we are now. So that scathing rebuke of chapter 23 was on Tuesday. And the same thing is concerning this discussion of Jerusalem's destruction on Tuesday. Now, we said a couple of times, and we're not going to say much more about that till we get to the Gospel of Luke, but Luke 21 may imply that the teaching continued on Wednesday, likely so. But we have no record of what went on, other than maybe an implication, and Luke, and I'll save our comments about Luke till we get to Luke. Now, this is a little three-point summary of chapter 23, 24, and 25 we gave last time, and we'll look at it again next week. Chapter 23 deals with a nation that was rebuked, chapter 24, a city destroyed, and in chapter 25 is a world judge. Now, that's not our outline, but that's a summary of what those three chapters are about. So we come now to this continued discussion of the nation of the Jews that had rejected the Lord. We saw it in chapter 22, we see it in chapter 23, and here more in chapter 24. So chapter 24 focuses on the destruction of Jerusalem. Now, many of our denominational friends and people of the world think Matthew 24 is a discussion of the signs of the end of time. So that when something happens in the Middle East, we have war break out, we have a conflict break out in the Middle East, that this is the sign that the end is coming near. And so those prophecies have been given over and over and over again, and they cite Matthew 24. We'll go through all of that in a moment. Here's the three-point outline of chapter 24. It's a very simple outline. Now, there's more details we're going to get to. In fact, very detailed we'll get to. But the three major points of the chapter are the announcement of the destruction, questions about the destruction, and then thirdly, the answers to those questions. So let's start with the announcement in verses 1 and 2. Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and the disciples came to him, showing him the buildings of the temple. We're not going to trace everything in parallel. By the way, Mark 13 and Luke 21 are the parallel accounts, if you want to flip back and forth between those. But Mark's account, and as you take Mark and Luke and harmonize that with Matthew, they were saying things like how great the buildings look and the stones of which the temple were built. And so the disciples are calling attention to that as they're leaving the temple. And naturally so, it was a magnificent building. Jesus uses that discussion to make an announcement. And here was his announcement at verse 2. That assuredly I say to you, not one stone will be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. At that point, he hasn't said a thing about when, how, who, or anything else other than this great building you see, this temple that you see, there's not one stone that'll be left standing on top of another. It's all going to be utterly obliterated and destroyed. Simple announcement. Make sense? Now, let's look at the questions at verse 3. There are actually two questions. The disciples who ask this question, and they're not identified in Matthew's account, Mark identifies them as Peter, Andrew, James, and John. That when they get According to verse 3, they sat at the Mount of Olives. So some time had passed. By time, I don't mean hours and hours, but by the time they go from the temple area to the Mount of Olives, they are pondering this statement that had been made at verse 2. Perhaps wondering when, and you say, well, how do you know they were wondering? Because that's what they ask. They ask the question about when. So at verse 3, here is the question. As they sat at the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, and they ask, tell us, when will these things be? What things? One stone will not be left on top of another, verse 2. Make sense? And what will be the sign of your coming in the end of the age? Those are two questions. So you might flag at verse 3. If you don't have a pencil, get your pencil out, because we're going to make several notes today. Hopefully you'll make several notes and some explanations through. Write in pencil. And there's a reason for that. I'm making notes in a new Bible, and I made a lot of notes yesterday. This morning I erased part of those and redid them. That's why you put write in pencil all the time. But anyway, be that as it may, I'll make a note at verse 3. There are two questions, and here's what the two questions are. When will these things, that is the destruction of Jerusalem, be? The second question is, what is the sign of your coming in the end of the age? Now, some argue that the disciples did not know what the difference was. Fair point. Some think that what the disciples thought they were asking is the same question worded two different ways. Probably so. They didn't even understand the nature of his kingdom. So I doubt they understood this distinction between the destruction of Jerusalem and the end of the age. Perhaps in their mind, you're talking about the obliteration that's going to take place in the end of time. So you tell us when this will take place. I really don't care what was in the mind of the disciples. Why would I say that? Bingo, exactly. It's how Jesus answered that I'm concerned with. I want to know what Jesus' answer was to those two questions. Jesus separated and parsed those two and made two different points about them. Make sense? Now, they may have thought it was the same thing. I really don't care. Jesus tells them they're not the same thing. Make sense? What's the sign of your coming and end of age, and when will these things be? Those are the two questions that are asked. All right. So flag verse 3, two questions are asked. Two questions are answered. Make sense? All right. Now let's talk about the answers. Since there were two questions, here are two answers. The first focuses on the destruction of Jerusalem, verses 4 to 34, and then verses 35 to 51 focuses on the second coming. Is there anything in 4 to 34 about the second coming? I think so. We'll see. We'll get to that. But 4 to 34, let's talk about the destruction of Jerusalem. Now in this, he talks about some things that are going to take place before the destruction of Jerusalem. Now, I want to get ahead of myself, and we'll come back, and we're going to flag this later. So don't get excited and say, well, I missed your point, and I wanted to flag verse 34. Let's jump ahead of ourselves. Let's fast forward over here as if this was a book. Let's turn several pages over now, and let's see what happens at verse 34. Verse 34 is going to be a transition point telling me that he's discussing things that are going to take place in the lifetime of the disciples, okay? All right, now let's go back. We're going to come back to verse 34, so don't get excited. We're not leaving yet. He talks in verses 4 to 34 about the destruction of Jerusalem. All right, now in that, he's going to tell me about things before the tribulation. He's going to tell me things about the tribulation, after the tribulation, and then when all this is going to happen. That was their question. So he's going to describe to them things that lead up to the destruction of Jerusalem. In other words, when will these things be? And are there any signs of that? Well, what takes place before the tribulation? Well, here they are. So let's start at verse 4. And so again, we can't camp on any one of these for a long time and get through the text. Because when we get through, I want you to have a general overview. I understand now what Matthew 24 is about. Make sense? That's where we're headed. All right, let's talk about what's going to happen before the tribulation. Now, what is the tribulation? That's the actual destruction of Jerusalem, mentioned in Daniel 9. We'll come back to Daniel 9 in a moment. Verse 4 and 5, take heed that no one deceive you. Here's a practical thing to learn, that we are responsible for being deceived. Isn't that interesting? Then blame it on merely those who were deceivers, but you make sure you're not deceived. You bear some responsibility for that. But anyway, for there will be many who come in my name saying I'm the Christ, and many will be deceived. So prior to the destruction of Jerusalem, there's going to be some false Christ. Some coming along, I am the Messiah. I'm the one that came forth, and they're going to be false in their claim. That's one of the signs that it's coming, because there are going to be some false Christ. Secondly, now verses 6 and 7, there's going to be wars and rumors of war. Now, this is where many misapply the text, saying when war breaks out in the Mideast, oh, this is the sign of the end of time. There's war broke out. There's fighting in Gaza right now, and has been since, what, last year? October 7 last year, was it? Or was it the year before? Anyway, for some time, the year before, 23. And so that's supposed to be signs of the end of the time. Matthew 24 has nothing to do with that. This is talking about the Roman period of peace was going to come to an end. Tension began to rise 20 years after Jesus made this statement in AD 50. This was stated in about 30. AD 50, tensions began to rise. The Jewish wars took place from 65 AD to 72 AD. And so right in the middle of that is the war, and we have the destruction of Jerusalem. At Caesarea, 20,000 Jews died. At Alexandria in Egypt, 50,000 died. At Damascus, 10,000 died. There were wars and rumors of war. Make sense? And so we're not looking at our questions. I'm not giving much time for comment. I understand that. I'm trying to get through the chapter. We've got a task ahead of us. Well, there's going to be nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom. So here is wars and rumors of wars. Now, verse 7, there's national calamity. All right, like what? Well, he mentions famine and pestilence. Your translation may not use pestilence. Don't get excited. That's missing from the minority text. If you got the English Standard, New American Standard, it's not there because of your translation favors the minority text, not the Textus Receptus. That's not good or bad. That's just a statement of fact. But if it is there, it just simply has reference to something like a plague. Some kind of disease or a plague. So here's some national calamity. There's earthquakes in various places. Then beginning at verse 8, there's going to be persecution set in. Again, this is all before the tribulation. They'll deliver you and there'll be tribulation, and they'll kill you, and they'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake, and many will be offended and betray one another and hate one another. Here's something practical. When people are under pressure, they often cave. When people are under pressure, they often stumble. And so that's going to take place prior to this tribulation. So before AD 70, when Jerusalem was destroyed, these things are taking place. Verse 11, they're going to be what else? False prophets will rise up and deceive many. Verse 12, sin is going to abound. In other words, there's going to be an abundance of lawlessness. And then the love of many will wax cold. What does that mean? Well, it means people are going to be apathetic and indifferent, and they don't seem to care anymore. That goes along with the downfall of a nation quite often. And then verse 14, the gospel will be spread to the Gentiles. You might make a marginal note, Romans 10 and 19, and Colossians 1, 23. I'll give those again in just a second. What do those passages say? The gospel went to the entire world. All right, Colossians 1, 23. Was the second one. The first was Romans 10 and 19. So the gospel is going to be preached to the world as a witness. In other words, it's going to go to the Gentiles. Well, prior to the destruction of Jerusalem, the gospel did go to the Gentiles, Acts chapter 10. All right? Now, what we've just covered is what takes place before the tribulation. Make sense? So what the disciples says, when will this be? When you say Jerusalem's going to be destroyed, when is that going to take place? Well, here's some things you're going to see happen. There's going to be wars, national calamity, persecution, false prophets, etc. The gospel is going to be spread. So if they're paying attention and they see wars broke out among the Jews, there is persecution set in strong, and The gospel has gone now to the Gentiles. Wait a minute. We may be getting closer to the destruction of Jerusalem. Does that make sense? These are signs that's coming. All right. Now, let's go back. We're still talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Now we have a discussion of the tribulation itself, the destruction, the devastation upon Jerusalem. Now, here's what we have in verse 15. In verse 15, he talks about the abomination of desolation. If you don't have marginal notes, make a note, Daniel 9, 23 to 27. Daniel 9, 23 to 27. Verse 27 talks about the abomination shall be one who makes desolate. That's the abomination of desolation. It's talking about the Roman army led by Titus, not Titus of the book of Titus, but the Roman general, comes in and devastates Jerusalem in AD 70. I'm not going to talk now about how that fits with the Daniel 70 weeks. We'll do that when we get to Daniel. But that was the destruction of Jerusalem prophesied, foretold in Daniel 9. And so Jesus is saying this is the abomination of desolation. Why is it called an abomination? The Romans were Gentiles, and they're in the middle of the temple, destroying the temple. That was an abomination, and they're desolating it. Making sense? All right. Now then, so verse 15, they're standing in the holy place. So during this tribulation, the Roman army is going to be in the temple. Now here's something very important to understand the context. Verses 16 to 20 says, when this takes place, they were to flee. If this is a discussion of the end of time, what good would fleeing do? You're not going to do a thing. Now, make a marginal note. So when somebody flags Matthew 24 as a discussion, here are the signs of the end of time, remind them, this says to flee. What good is fleeing going to do if this is the end of time and the destruction of the world? There's nowhere to flee. All right, let's see what it says. Beginning at verse 16. Let those who are in Judah flee to the mountains. And if you're on the housetop, in other words, this is going to be sudden. So don't even come down to get anything out of the house. If you're in the field, don't go back at verse 18 to get clothes. Woe to those who are pregnant because they wouldn't flee easy, or those that are nursing babies in those days. You can't flee as fast and run as fast carrying a baby or pregnant. Pray that your flight be not in winter. Well, that's going to be difficult. Or on the Sabbath. Well, now, much has been said about the Sabbath here at verse 20, that it's evidence that we are to observe the Sabbath under the dispensation of Christ because it would have been in play by AD 70. Not so. All he's simply saying is that when they would flee on the Sabbath, that because there are Jews still observing the Sabbath, businesses would be closed around Jerusalem. That didn't mean the Christians were observing the Sabbath. It just simply means businesses would be closed. So resources would be few. If you could imagine, the Seventh-day Adventist ran every business pretty much in town, and on Saturday you needed to get out of town, and everything where you buy gas and food and anything, every bit of it's closed. A little bit difficult, isn't it? All right. Well, the same thing was true for them. Others have suggested the Sabbath may have created a problem because the only ones that would have been fleeing and traveling any distance, even in the midst of the tribulation, would be Christians. And so they are flagged and they're identified and perhaps more dangerous. So pray that your flight not be on the Sabbath. Now then, he talks about the great tribulation itself, the destruction coming upon the city and upon the temple itself at verse 20 and 21. Two things he says about that. It's going to be a great tribulation. And what does he say about it? Before it's cut short, there's something else he said. You're right about that. Say again? Yeah, nothing's been equal to this. In other words, there's never been anything like this since the beginning of the world into this time, nor shall it ever be. That doesn't mean there's not been a mass destruction. There was the flood. What he's saying is, concerning like a city, there's never been a kind of devastation and destruction that is described of what's going on in the city of Jerusalem. So it's unlike anything before or after, And had it not come to an end. The idea of it shortened is not so much talking about how short it is, but that it comes to an end. If there wasn't an end to this, then no one could be saved. And so in that sense, it's shortened. Your translation may say shortened, or it may give some variation of the idea of bringing to some finality. That it doesn't go on and on and on. Does that make sense? So it's intense. It's for a short time. And there's been nothing like it before. Now, 23 to 28 poses some difficulty for me. And let's see if I can work through that. And that's one reason I'm trying to get through these difficulties without taking a lot of time for comments. Look at verse 20, starting at verse 23. In the midst of this devastation and this time of tribulation, if someone said, look, here is the Christ, or he's over there, don't believe it. So in the destruction, as it's going on, someone may, because so much chaos going on, the Christ has come. The Christ has returned. Don't believe them. Don't even go looking for that. Or if they say he came and he's out in the desert, or he's in the inner room, don't believe that. So now the question is, what is verse 27 and 28 about? Those are some of the most difficult verses for me in this context. Let me give you some of the possibilities. Some think that it's, and I have previously thought that this is talking about the coming of the Lord in judgment. And so the Bible talks about the coming of the Lord in a number of ways. He's coming the second time. In the end of time, he comes in judgment on nations in the Old Testament, New Testament. He's coming in judgment on Jerusalem here. I really think that verse 27 is talking about the second coming. You say, but I thought we were talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Yeah, but I think what he's saying in this context is he's going to draw a contrast between the destruction of Jerusalem and the other question that he's going to get to, the second coming. Let me give you some evidence of why I think that. It seems to me that he's talking about the second coming. Some of our own brethren think not, but I think, here's a footnote to make to that. If my understanding be correct, then here is evidence that the second coming didn't take place in AD 70 as the AD 70 doctrine teaches. Does that make sense? They say the second coming happened in AD 70. Here's one of the reasons for that. Look at verse 20. We're in the context of some saying the Christ has come. The Christ has come. Well, Jesus had already come, though they had rejected him as the Messiah. So he's saying to his disciples who already know that he's come the first time, if you hear reports during this tribulation, during this time of devastation, the Christ has come. See, he's already going to be ascended back to heaven. Don't believe that I've come back. Don't believe that. So here's why. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. I think he's saying that when I come back and when I return, it's going to be from east to west and north to south. Everyone's going to take note of that. The fact that we question whether Jesus came back in AD 70 is proof that he didn't come back in AD 70, because everybody would know it. When somebody in our day and time says, the Lord returned the other day, but he only appeared to those in Africa or those in Europe, don't believe it. Because when he comes back, everybody's going to take notice of that. Revelation 1:7 is a good marginal note to make right there. Does that make sense? Now, if you think it's meaning he came in judgment, then plug that in and that may work. I've tried that and still had some difficulty, but it may work. I'm going to leave it at that. Now, verse 28 poses a difficulty depending on what you just did with verse 27. For where the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Previously, I thought that was a separate point from what he's talking about, the false Christ, that he may be saying that the Roman army is like a vulture, and some think that's what he's talking about, feeding on the carcass of Jerusalem. Maybe so. Maybe so. There are various interpretations of verse 28. That may be what I just described may be true. It may be saying, and this seems to make much more sense to me, that the false Christ are seizing those who are making the claims of the coming of Christ, or the false Christ are seizing on the opportunity to deceive, that Where the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. That makes sense to me. Here's a third interpretation. It may be saying how quickly the coming of the Lord will be. Of verse 27. And Pope argues this in his commentary, that where the carcass is, there are the eagles be gathered together. That when there's a carcass, it is immediately that the vultures or the eagles, and there's a question whether the eagles can refer to a vulture or not. An eagle is not a vulture. But that goes back to the word that's used, the original word, can it be referred to? I'll leave that to your discussion. Check Pope, he has 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pages on that. But anyway, that also makes sense to me. So one of the latter two makes some sense. So somehow verse 28, I think, is a commentary on verse 27. Depending on what you did with verse 27 is what you're going to do with verse 28. Does that make sense? And so I'm convinced verse 27 is the second coming. That when they say the Lord has come, don't believe that, because when he comes, when I come back, everybody on earth is going to know it. And he adds this comment, where the eagles, where the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. That may have reference to the suddenness, the immediateness. He's going to come suddenly, just like the eagles come down upon the carcass. The vulture comes down upon the carcass. Or it may have reference to the false Christ taking advantage of that. All right. Now, I've exhausted my knowledge of verse 28, so we're going to move on. Verse 29 to 30, now this is after the tribulation. And you think that was difficult? We get into some more difficulty here. Some things that take place after the tribulation. Two things. There's going to be a change in order and a downfall of a nation. The Jewish nation will never be the same again. Stick that in the back of your mind and we'll come back to that. The expressions that are used here are used in the Old Testament to describe the downfall of a nation. How so? Well, make a marginal note. Get your pencil ready. Well, let's read the language first, and then we'll get your pencil ready. We'll make a marginal note. Immediately after. That's a key word. You might circle, underline the word after. Immediately after. Whatever he's talking about comes after, not during, but after the tribulation. What's our word? After. All right, make sure you're on the same word with me. All right. The sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven will be shaken. Wow. That sounds like major stuff. That is major stuff. The Bible uses that language not to refer to the sun literally going dark and the moon and the stars literally falling. Isaiah 13 and in verse 10, make that a marginal note, that describes a change in order, the downfall of a nation. In fact, the very phrase I've got here, you might write in the margin, a change in order, the downfall of a nation. Isaiah 13, 10 puts that upon Babylon. The fall of Babylon. Babylon was so major, so great, that when it collapsed and fell, it's like the sun darkened. Let's just suppose, just for a moment, let me illustrate how that works. Suppose when you wake up in the morning, the breaking news is Washington has been utterly obliterated. There's not a president, there's not a vice president, there's not a Congress, there's not a Supreme Court. We have no government in play right now. Our military is completely wiped out. There is no United States anymore. Now, will we as God's people survive? Yeah, but I'm going to tell you, that's like God turned the lights out. That was as catastrophic as the stars falling, the sun being darkened. There is no sun anymore, and the moon doesn't give any light anymore. That is catastrophic. That's what happened to Babylon, Isaiah 13, 10. Let me give another reference. Egypt, Ezekiel 32, 7 to 9. Egypt's fall was described with the same language. Similar language is used in Acts 2 and in verse 20. It's just a change in order. Now, let's go back. I said we'd keep something in your mind. The Jewish nation would be no more. From this point of this devastation of Jerusalem, there is not a Jew anywhere that can tell you what tribe they're from. Now, let that sink in. Let a moment of silence let that sink in. there's not a Jew living. Now, they can say, I'm of the tribe of Levi. They can't prove that because their records were destroyed. There's not a Jew living that can trace themselves back and say, I'm of this tribe or of that tribe. Their lights were turned out. Their sun was darkened. Their moon won't shine anymore. Does that make sense? The downfall of a nation. Now the difficulty comes at 30 and 31. What is this talking about? Like verse 27, I've previously thought that may be describing a coming in judgment, but I have a little trouble with that because of a word we circled. These are things that take place after the tribulation. This is not the tribulation. This is after the tribulation. So verse 30 said, the sign of the coming, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. All right, there's two things. What's the point? I think the point is this, of verse 30 and 31, that the sign of his coming will not precede his coming. His coming, the sign of his coming, will be his coming. See, that's not like the destruction of Jerusalem. Does that make sense? There will be signs of the coming of the destruction of Jerusalem, but there's not going to be signs concerning his coming. The sign of his coming will be his coming. In other words, there's not going to be signs that tell us, I think he's about to come. We better get ourselves ready. When he comes, boom, it's it. He's come. Make sense? All right. Here's why I think that refers to the second coming. Because all the tribes of the earth will mourn. Not all the tribes of the earth will mourn. There's two evidences I'm citing. One is the word, you circled it, after. And the second is all the tribes of the earth will mourn. All the tribes of the earth, maybe Jews, but not all the tribes of the earth mourn at the destruction of Jerusalem. But they will at this coming. Make sense? How does that all plug in? Any way you go with it, there's some difficulties. I got it. You say, I see some difficulties with what you just said. Yeah. But there's some difficulties with other alternatives. So you're going to have to plug in the way that works best for you. All right. Now, let's go to when this will happen. And so we got to pick our pace up just a little bit, but we're getting to a critical point. So there's two things he says about that when you see these things. He gives the parable of the fig tree that when its branch is already tender and puts forth leaves, you know summer is near. Just like you look out and you say, whether it's a fig tree or maybe it's some other fruit tree, and you see, I see blossoms and I see a little bit of fruit coming on. That's a good sign that summer is near. I see a sign. So how do we know about the destruction of Jerusalem? Look at verse 33, you might underline. So you, when you see these things, who's he talking to? His disciples. And if you say, well, I think there's a multitude, have at it. Whoever is there, it's people then living. People alive at the time of Christ, when you see these things. So the things he's been talking about concerning the destruction of Jerusalem, they were going to see. Make sense? Now, let's look at verse 34. He said at verse 34, get ready to mark some things. This is a key. Verse 34 is your key to the chapter. You say, I wished I had a key that unlocked the mysteries of this chapter. If there is a key, it's verse 34. Make sense? All right. This generation will by no means pass till all these things take place. Now, I know in the midst of that, he's made reference over to the second coming. But the primary discussion has been the destruction of Jerusalem. This generation, people then living, who will see these things, verse 32, is not going to pass till this all takes place. You might draw a line between 34 and 35 or make a marginal note. This is a transition point. Let me say that again. Draw a line or mark between 34 and 35. This is a transition point. Because now he talks about heaven and earth will pass away. But his word wouldn't pass away. But of that day, what day? The day heaven and earth will pass away. Not the destruction of Jerusalem. Of that day, who knows that? Had a question on that. The angels don't know. No one knows Mark adds, even the Son doesn't know, but the Father only. Might flag Mark's got a little additional information on that. All right, make sense? So let's go to 35 to 51 to finish this up. Now this ought to be a little simpler because we're more familiar with the second coming because of many other texts. So we've just got a few minutes. Let's see if we can run through this. So his point is, no one knows the day nor the hour. No one knows when it's coming. There's no signs of its coming. He's already flagged that concept earlier, if my interpretation of 30 and 31 be correct. But there's no signs. Actually, verse 37 to 39 is going to say there's no warning of that. Now, I ask a question I don't know what question it was. What will we be doing when the Lord returns? What will people be doing? Whoever, if he comes in our lifetime or in the lifetime of those that are living at the time, what will they be doing? Whatever they normally do, going about their daily activities. That's the point. So look at verse 37. As it was in the days of Noah, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. So what's his point? Well, they were marrying, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, etc. In other words, they were going about their daily activities. So what will people be doing? If he comes in your lifetime, you're going to be at work, you're going to be at school, you're going to be at home, you're going to be sleeping, you're going to be eating supper, you're going to be mowing the grass, you're going to be shopping at Walmart, you're going to be looking at your phone, your computer. Whatever you normally do, that's what you're going to be doing when the Lord returns. There's not any warning so that you're outside waiting. I'm ready. I know he's about to take place. So there is no warning. 40 and 41 is talking about a separation of the righteous and the wicked. Something it refers to a rapture. There is no concept of rapture in the New Testament, or Old Testament for that matter, but the two will be taken, two will be in a field, one taking another left, and two will be grinding, one taking the other left. That's the idea of separation. When the Lord comes back, the righteous and the wicked will be separated. So now he shifts gears to we must be ready for that. See, the disciples had just asked, when will all this take place? Well, here's what's going to happen with the destruction of Jerusalem, but concerning the second coming, no one knows. There's going to be no warning. There's going to be a separation of the righteous and the wicked. All right, what you need to do is be ready. So look at verse 42. Watch, therefore, for you don't know the hour in which the Lord is coming. So you don't know, so just watch. And if one had known the hour that the thief would come in, you'd watch. In other words, if you've ever had a thief break into your house, if you'd have known they're going to be there at 4 o'clock in the morning, you would have got up about 3 and been sitting at the door watching and waiting and had the police on the phone. But you didn't know that. All right? Now, in verse 44, therefore be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour which you do not expect. So watch and be ready. Now then, the faithful and wise servant, 45 to 51, to wind this up, is just a little parable. It's not insignificant. But the key to that is verse 48 concerning the attitude of the evil servant who said, my master delays his coming. Might underline the word delay. He's delaying his coming. So it's talking about a faithful servant who does what he's supposed to do. And if his master comes in and catches him, he's doing the right thing and he's okay. Here's the evil servant says, my master's delaying, so I've got time to do whatever I want to do. And so he starts acting evil and he ends up being destroyed. That's the point. So the key is the delay, this concept of the delay gives me time. I've got time, and you might get caught. Does that make sense? So you think, well, the Lord's coming back, but I'm not sure when. It could happen. Probably it's going to be a long, long time. So I've got time to live my life and sow my wild oats. You don't have time for that. All right, that's a hurried look at Matthew chapter 24. The parallel accounts give a little bit of information that are not, I don't have time to go through that, but only like 3 verses in Luke and 2 in Mark, maybe 3 in Mark that have a little extra information, and we're going to have to stop right there. That's Matthew 24.